I'm Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll talk to Gene Martinet, author of The Art of Mingling, Fun and Proven Techniques for Mastering Any Room. Trust me, it is as important to your business, personal, and social life as Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Stick around. I fully expect the delightful Gene will master this room in just moments. When Gene Martinet told me she had rewritten and revised more than 50% of her 1992 guide, The Art of Mingling, Fun and Proven Techniques for Mastering Any Room, I had to admit I was curious. As an author myself, I think if I had that much new content to offer in an older book, I would have leaned toward an entirely new title. After all, the original Art of Mingling had already sold more than 150,000 copies. Wouldn't her many fans support a new title over the revision of an older one? Well, on the other hand, she does seem to have focused in on how mingling has changed over the years. Damn you, Facebook! And there is probably an entirely new generation out there to be reached with content such as step-by-step instructions for performing entrance maneuvers such as the fade-in and the flattery entree, escape techniques such as the human sacrifice, the changing of the guard, and the sellout, how to execute the hors d'oeuvre maneuver, and perfect the touchy-feely mingle. The secret to listening, avoiding the dumb use of smartphones, and directions for keeping up with people after the party. All that and hundreds more lines tailored to every mingling situation. Now, I'm interested in the subject of mingling because of a curious social reversal in my own household. In the early years of our marriage, my wife was always the one wanting to go to parties and socialize with folks. I, on the other hand, was shy and introverted, lacking confidence in my ability to make small talk, mingle, and fit in. But over the years, our roles have reversed, and now I'm the outgoing one, and my wife is more hesitant to mix. I'm hopeful of learning from Gene Martinet today and sharing the tips I gained with my spouse. Now, this is Gene's second visit to Mr. Media, the first in living color. Back in 2009, she entertained us with tips from her then-new book, Life is Friends, A Complete Guide to the Lost Art of Connecting in Person. Gene Martinet, welcome back to Mr. Media, and let's mingle.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here, Bob.
Good to have you. So, Gene, what's new?
That's a perfectly good opening line. What's new? I'm here with you. What's new? I have a new book coming out.
what's so new about this book? I mean, this is in essence, it's not a new book, but with more than 50% of it revised and rewritten, it is a new book.
Well, it was very interesting what you said in the introduction, because I had to keep it within the confines of the Art of Mingling is that the techniques that I originally identified, you know, the fade in, the flattery entree, those basic techniques remain the techniques. So it would be sort of cheating to put it in a new book. But what I did do is, you know, back when I first wrote this book, I had sections in it like cigarettes as props, you know, pros and cons, which is completely not, you know, not applicable anymore. And also all the lines, you know, it just all was very old fashioned and corny. So while the basic techniques remain the same, I added, you know, about, you know, maybe 20-30% new techniques, and then added new lines and new scenarios to describe those techniques that would be so that people could understand them better and relate to them more.
Wait, it's no longer appropriate for me to, like, dangle a cigarette from my lips during a party? This is news to me. I was all set to take up smoking just to do that.
Now in some situations, you can use cigarettes actually as a way to go off party. You know, if you meet somebody you really like and you can find out somehow that they're also one of the 2% of people left that are smokers, you know, you could say, would you like to go outside for a cigarette? But it's all changed now, so...
That really, I mean, and all kidding aside, that really is a dramatic change, certainly in American culture, that it used to be if you were the non-smoker and you went into a party, everybody around you was smoking. You might be looking for someone who is a non-smoker to step outside with onto a balcony or right. Go outside. And now it's just the opposite.
Absolutely. I mean, and I had all these lines for cigarettes and, you know, if you're at a bar, you know, the whole lighting of the cigarette. There are a lot of things. And that's just one example of things that how it's changed. So...
And technology is another big part of what's changed in the book, right?
Yeah, that's the main thing. In fact, that's one of the reasons the publisher really wanted to do another revision with me, because, you know, everybody, I think, is so aware of how much people are glued to their, basically our smartphones are now a part of our bodies, and people walk around, especially younger people. I mean, this is not, there's wonderful things about smartphones. I'm not a Luddite at any, I'm addicted to my iPhone, there's no question, but people are forgetting how to actually socialize face to face, even more than when I first wrote the book. I think I said 90% of America has mingle phobia, and I think that's the fear of going into a room full of strangers, and I think that pretty much remains the same. But now we have, in addition, we have this what I call the worldwide web headedness phenomenon, which is just people are so used to communicating through their fingers that they kind of don't know how to do it anymore with eye contact and, you know, what's appropriate and how do you get in and out of a conversation smoothly. And people, it's really people's social muscles have atrophied.
Plus, I mean, in addition to that, when you're actually in a social setting, our phones have become props, right? I mean, it can be, oh, you know what? I need to check in with the babysitter. And
right.
Whereas it used to be, you'd have to ask the host, can I use your phone to call home and make sure the babysitter and the kid's okay or whatever. Now you've got it right in your pocket. So you can whip it out at any time as an excuse.
Right. Right. And of course, I have a new section of the book called The Dumb Use of Smartphones, in which I give very specific guidelines. And this is, you know, these are my opinion. This is my opinion, but very strict guidelines for how one should use your cell phone and not use your cell phone at a party. I mean, at a cocktail party, it's a little bit different when you're sitting around with a group of 10 of your best friends. But in general, you really should not, if it's not an emergency, don't take out your cell phone unless you leave the group of people you're talking to. Excuse yourself, and then you go somewhere else as if you were going to use the hostess's phone. But once one person whips out their cell phone in a group, that's the end of any organic conversation that was happening in that group. You know, and I'm a big lover of my whole motivation for writing this book is that I just love the art of conversation. I love what happens when you start talking about something perhaps, you know, unimportant with several smart people, and then it kind of winds its way and sort of in a spiral, and you know, you end up. But as soon as someone takes out their phone, that is killed, because somebody is now offline, so to speak. They are not there anymore. And it's also, there's something I have called, that I write about, called the eye for an iPhone, which is as soon as one person takes out their phone, you know, that's it. It spreads like a domino effect throughout the whole party. Suddenly everyone's on their phone. Oh, you're checking your text? I check my text.
Well, I notice that if I go to dinner with my wife, I try to let her be the first one to take the phone out. And you know, because she wants to check something. And then if she takes her phone out, usually it's just the two of us in this situation.
Right.
If she takes her phone out, then I feel like, okay, I can go and check my mail.
Right. Of course, I do the same thing. I have a thing. I never take my phone out first either. You know, you've heard of those businessman dinners now where everybody puts their cell phone in the middle and the first person who takes it out has to pick up the tab.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that. That's good.
Oh, it's great. I loved hearing about it because, you know, all these especially important businessmen, they never leave their phones, you know, they never take it off. And I think that's I certainly would never pick up my phone if I were at that kind of a dinner.
Sure. No, that would, because it's probably getting very expensive the longer the dinner goes on and the drinks are being served and, you know.
Right, and as soon as somebody else picks up their phone, you can order another bottle of wine.
Right. I like that. I like that a lot. Now, Jean, to my mind, your book is, and I mentioned this in the introduction, your book is really, is in the same class as classics such as the Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Thank you.
Did you ever imagine, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say that, but did you ever imagine when you first started writing it way back when that could happen?
No, not in a million years. This book was started because I was at a wedding in Ohio, and I was just joking around with some friends of mine after the reception, and they all were teasing me because I had actually spoken to all of the people in the whole city at the reception, and all of them had just stayed in their own little group. And I started saying, and I started writing down these mingling techniques, you know, on a cocktail napkin. It was just a joke, you know, and they were laughing that I had names for them, which I was just kind of making up. And then I came back and I talked to an agent I knew, and she was like, you know, that people really are afraid of mingling. And so, but I still, even then, I wrote the book. I thought it was just sort of a, it was just a tongue in cheek kind of book. But the more I wrote it, the more I actually ended up putting real techniques in it. And the more I talked to people, the more I realized this is like a real thing. And then, you know, still the first edition, I got paid a tiny advance and immediately got on the Today Show. So it was incredibly surprising and fun.
Well, I know when we talked the first time, which was in 2009, for the book Life is Friends, you think, okay, that just seems obvious. But then you read that book or this book, and you have just very common sense stuff. It speaks to people. You write it in a very friendly and engaging way, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Or I sort of thought about that, but I never kind of organized my thought around that.
Right. I mean, I think what I'm doing is more or less, first of all, it's more of being a coach than an informer. You know, I want to encourage people to do something that they already know is a good thing. You know, to go to the party, you know, whenever you're invited, unless you're sick, you go to the party, to talk to people you don't know, you know, and it really doesn't, it's not earth shattering, but I like to think I've couched it in an entertaining sort of jacket so that people can remember it and also get into it, like start to realize that it's fun. That's my main message, is that this is like, it's fun. Mingling is really fun. Talking to people that you don't know for 15 minutes can be really fun.
And usually it's a matter of once you get started, it's fun. It's just getting started.
Right. It's daunting. It's daunting for everyone. It's usually not daunting for me, because at this point I really am kind of see every room of strangers as a big table laid with food, you know, for me. But there are some situations in which I walk in, I'm not in a good mood, maybe it's a really tough room, and I go, oh God, you know, can I really, you know, I'm nervous, or think, you know, people are gonna not want to talk to me. I mean, it's human nature, but that's one of my rules, you know, in the book. One of the things I underscore is that everybody, almost everyone in the whole world feels the same way. Once you understand that everybody is the same, really, we're all humans, no matter what our surface thing is. And, you know, I've had 10-minute conversations with people I never saw again that really did, you know, play a part as becoming the fabric of my life, like a really interesting conversation that goes in there and it becomes part of your experience. So,
well, let's get into the book specifics a little bit. And I'm thinking that some people are just damn scared. And I know one that, because I live with one, to be in social situations. It's equivalent, I think, to a would-be actor getting stage fright before a performance, right? Because it is sort of a performance. Every time you walk into that room and there's people, you have different ways to view them. So what are some essential tips for just getting people who are nervous about this or unnerved by this, just getting them in the door of a social situation?
Well, you know, there are some things to tell yourself, which is that nobody's thinking about you. You know, there's certain rules that I put out in the book. Nobody's thinking about you. Everyone's thinking about themselves. But I do also have some survival fantasies for people who are really terrified, and they sound really silly. But one of the ones is called the buddy system, and that's where you have to have a little bit of imagination, but you have to imagine if you're not there. Right next to her. She has to imagine that you are, or her best friend is, standing right behind her as she goes up and talks to someone, so that she feels like she's not alone, and that if she gets rebuffed or something, that her best friend right over her shoulder is going to say, oh my God, what a jerk, you know, and sort of be there for her. There's the different fantasies work for different people. There's the naked room fantasy, which, you know, works for some people. Usually it's best if you can imagine people in the room dressed in their underwear or something silly. Not, you don't want to have an erotic fantasy while you're doing this.
Well, I was gonna say, you call it the naked fantasy, but you don't want them. You indicate you don't want them to be naked. You want them to be wearing, you know, kind of, you know, cheap or maybe cheap underwear, Victoria's Secret, which I'm like, oh, you're taking all the fun out of this for me, but okay.
Well, that's a whole different kind of thing. But if you want to get ready to talk to people, yeah, the word naked is in there just because you basically want to strip away their anything that seems daunting about them is what it's what I meant to be. And then there's also the invisible room fantasy, where, you know, if you're really nervous and you just want to take a moment, you just pretend that no one can see you. And the fact is, it works because no one really can see you, because everyone is so focused on themselves. That's a part of human nature. But if you just want to take a moment and walk around the room, go have a nibble of something and just like chill out, you can do that. No one's actually going to be watching you. And anyway, and then there's also some opening techniques that I give that are fairly easy for people who are nervous. And we can get into it later, but since you're going with your wife, there's also a section on team mingling where you can help her a lot.
Well, she won't let me go with my girlfriend, so what do you suggest?
I mean, when you guys go to a party together, the first rule is that you shouldn't actually mingle. You can't stay together the whole night, because that's not mingling. I mean, people do that. Couples go and they're just stuck together like glue, and that doesn't make for as interesting of an evening as if you separate. However, if one of them is a minglephobic, like your wife seems to have become, you can do – there's several techniques. Like, there's something I call shepherding. Where if you see your wife going off and sitting in a corner, you go get her, you bring her back, and you introduce her to somebody you've just talked to. Then once their conversation gets going, then you can leave. Or there's another similar one I call conversational procurement, which is where you go around the room and you meet people. Since you're more of an extrovert now, you meet people, then you have to meet my wife. She would love what you were just saying about X. And then you physically bring that person over to your wife. And you can just feed her an endless stream of not only people, but of first subjects, because you introduce them, her, and you say. So, I mean, it's much easier. Your wife actually has it easier than if she's going to a party by herself as a minglephobe. Because you can do a lot to help her and yet still not stand by her side.
All right. Well, enough about her.
Makes me want to sing when I said that.
Well, all right, but enough about her. Let's talk about me for a second.
Okay.
So, I didn't mean that the way it sounded, folks. But like this weekend, I attended a series of social functions. It started with a Friday night, an awards dinner for a friend, and then there was a luncheon the next day, and then there was a football game that was a social event in a box and that whole thing. But my biggest worry – I'm sorry?
Sounds fun. It sounds like fun.
It was fun. As it turned out, it was fun. But I mean, my biggest worry in going to these things is actually getting out of the clutches of someone with whom the conversation is going nowhere, or they're really excited about the conversation. I think you have the example, but they're really into the conversation, and I'm just like dying, and I can't think of a way to change gears. When I try to put my interviewer's hat on and just ask them questions, it's not working. It's just not going anywhere. I think you refer to this as the big escape, and I'm about to panic. What do I do? How do I get out of these situations?
Right. Well, Bob, you have hit upon probably what is the single most it's the biggest reason people don't go to parties. Actually, almost before the shyness is their fear of getting stuck talking to somebody they don't want to be talking to. Sounds terrible, but that just really, it doesn't mean you're a bad person, but you just, and so I have a whole chapter with 12 escape maneuvers for you. And of course, the most obvious one, because when you're mingling, you do want to remain in control. You know, you can only have fun if you choose where and who you're going to talk to. So, and getting stuck with somebody who's talking about, like, I remember one conversation I was stuck in for a while. Somebody was talking about their, wanted to buy placemats, and they were going on and on about which color placemats they should buy, and I was like, ah. Anyway, so the number one excuse people use is what I call the buffet bye-bye and other handy excuses. Everybody knows this one. You say, I've just got to go get a drink, or I'm starving. The problem with that is that people will follow you almost anywhere. Even if you're talking to a woman to the ladies' room line, the only one that works really well is what is called selling out, and that is to say, I have to make a call. And because of you're being etiquette appropriate and not using your cell phone while you're talking to them, you obviously have to excuse yourself to go make that call. So there's that. But there's also some easier ones, actually easier though they sound harder, like the human sacrifice. That's everyone's favorite escape technique from what I have found, and that is one where you have to know at least one other person at the party, hopefully more, to make this work. But as you're talking to the boring person or the person who just isn't talking about something you want to talk about, you you find somebody who's walking close to you, who you know, you grab that person, and you say, have you met Mrs. Boring here? And then as soon as they introduce each other, there's a like a 10-second window when you can just walk away. Because change equals movement, movement equals change is one of the Mingling rules. And there's a shift that happens when someone new enters the group. And so that one is actually, you can... It sounds really mean, but people do it all the time. It's just one of those things. It's like getting somebody a dance partner before you leave them on the dance floor alone.
I was human sacrificed. Someone did that to me over the weekend. I couldn't quite put my finger on the name for it at the time, but in reviewing the book, I remembered that's exactly what they did. And
I mean, I've been human sacrificed. Everyone's been human sacrificed. It's not something that nobody should take it personally, because it's just, you know, there's all kinds of reasons people want to leave it. It may have nothing to do with the fact that they don't want to talk to you. It may just be that they've been told to talk to a business contact and they're, you know, they've got an agenda at that party. And so they're going to cut your conversation short. But it's a very normal thing. In fact, you know, the thing about all my escape techniques is that when you read them, you'll recognize, you know, I'm not inventing anything new. I'm just identifying and clarifying things that we already know or should know.
Well, and that's what I like about the book is that, yeah, it's not necessarily you haven't reinvented the wheel here.
No,
you've organized, you've classified, and you've tagged to use the archaeological approach. You know, all these techniques, and that.
And I mean, the thing is, for someone like you, because you're a good mingler, obviously. It's one thing, but there are some people who have written me who said, thank you so much for, you know, the lines in chapter one that you offer, because I never would have thought of that. So while I'm saying that, there are some people who have forgotten how to do these basics. So that's one of the things.
All right. So what about this? How do I know when it's better to remain standing than to find a comfy chair and sit down at a party?
If you want to mingle, you don't sit down, because I mean, if your feet are tired and you can't stand, you know, you can't stand, you have to sit down. But in general, it's really a bad idea to sit down at a cocktail party or at a large party, because once you sit down, it's really hard to get back up. If someone starts talking to you, you really can't. It's really, all these escape techniques are easy to do when you're standing. They all involve, you know, other people and eye contact and things. But to sit down with someone, then have them, and someone sits down and they're talking to you, for you to leave them, you have to stand up. It's a much more marked situation. And so it can really feel rude to the other person if you're trying to escape from a sitting down position. And as I think you noted, I have an example in the book of a party where I had three parties to go to that night, and I was tired, and it was a nice terrace, so I thought I'd sit down, and I got lasso absoed to death by this woman who was just talking about her dog endlessly. I mean, it was just really almost like it wasn't real, because she was going on and on about her dog in a very high-pitched voice like this. And so I realized, okay, it's very hard to do the human sacrifice or any other of these techniques from a sitting down position. Obviously, you can do the I have got to – what I ended up doing was saying, you know, I have got to stand up because I'm getting stiff sitting here. And if I don't move now, I'll probably fall asleep. So, of course, that is one of the dangers of sitting down also. You don't want to fall asleep.
And that actually brings me to another question. What if you're one of those people who can get to a party, but it takes you a bit of liquid courage before you leave home to go there, and once you get there, you feel the need for a little more liquid courage to keep going? How do you keep yourself under control? Because, of course, that's the problem with liquid courage, is it gives you that courage, but it also puts you in a situation where if you have too much of it, you may wind
right
up leaving behind some wonderful party stories for other people.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the big no-nos of getting drunk at a party. I mean, unless you know everybody there, it's your like 60th birthday or something. But you know, it's very tempting to have a drink before a party, and I'm not going to tell you that I have never done that, because if I decide that, okay, I am really nervous for some reason, which doesn't usually happen to me, but what I'll do is have like a quarter of a drink, you know, like, or a half a glass of wine, you know, like, just, you know, you shouldn't, you should try not to drink before the party. It's not a good idea. But if you do, just know your limit and make sure that you take half of a drink before you go. It's mostly psychological when you take that liquid courage. So if you can, you know, take a half a shot of something and put orange juice on, you know, whatever, just don't. And then if you have done the liquid courage to go to a party, which again, I don't recommend, then don't go get a drink right away when you get to the party if you can help it. But it's hard for me to actually advise people, because if people are going to do that and probably make their mistakes before they learn not to do that, but it's definitely not a good idea.
All right, so there we talked about alcohol. Let's talk about food, because now in my case, I don't drink, but I am one of those people who always seems to gravitate to a position near the food. If it's in a home or a condo or an apartment or something, you'll probably find me in the kitchen or right around the kitchen. And it's not that I want to eat constantly, but I always find that being near the food gives you an ever-ready prop. You can always have another and another, and even when you have nothing to say, you could be munching. Is this a good move or is this a bad move?
It's not a bad move. What I say is that it's not – if you can – when you first get to the party, it's a good idea not to go right for the food, because when you're meeting people, it's – you know, if you don't want to have food in your mouth, like – upon meeting every new person, and it's easier to shake hands, and so sort of in the beginning of a party, I'd say you should hold off on eating. So don't take off your coat and go right to the food. You know, try and meet a couple of people first, but then, you know, the food table is a great mingling prop, because, and you know, as long as you don't, I found myself at one party hogging all the smoked salmon because I have a weakness for smoked salmon. And I think I realized I was using the smoked salmon. I was using the people to get to the smoked salmon instead of the smoked salmon to talk to people. And it should be that way. So you can, you know, because everyone can talk about the food, and it's people feel friendly when they're eating together, and you know, so it's not a bad place to go. Just make sure that you're not keeping other people from being at the table, you know, so you're not taking a space up at the table that no one else can get there. But you know, and you don't want to overdo it. But no, being at the food table, if it's not the first thing, is okay.
And note to anyone planning to invite me to a social setting: smoked salmon, very good. Yes, always always happy to see that piled up somewhere. Now, Jean, in my younger days, I would have never dreamed of discussing politics at a party, but these days it seems inevitable. What I find is that you say one thing and people already jump to a conclusion as to who you are and what your politics are. I always find that they're inevitably wrong. You have some ideas for navigating the politics of a situation like this.
Yes, I do. You know, it's true that these days, you know, the old rule in the old Victorian days used to be that safe subjects were the weather and your health. That's the line. But now both of those subjects actually lead now directly to politics, because we're so polarized now, because the weather is now leads right to global warming discussion, and you know, your health, you know, healthcare, and you know, so there's really hardly any topics that can't be taken there by someone who wants to talk politics. So I do have some techniques for figuring out how to diffuse situations. First, you don't talk politics unless you know that you're not with a fanatic. So I have some lines and things in the book to help you identify whether or not you are with a fanatic when you start getting near to that subject. And, you know, if you find somebody who's a fanatic on your side, that's okay. But, you know, you don't want to argue at a party. So if you do find yourself suddenly in an argument, because it can happen quickly, or it's where someone's getting hot under the collar, there are lines I have for diffusing and escaping, you know, where you say things like, well, you know, I guess we're not going to solve all the world's problems today, but you know, I'd like to have some of that smoked salmon. You know, there is a diffuse and escape sort of thing that you can do with that. And I do offer some lines in the book on how to that from their answer, you can tell whether or not they are fanatic.
And speaking of politics, when, if ever, is lying acceptable in a social setting, either to get into the party or to extricate yourself from a situation?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Bob, because it's one of the things that a lot of people take exception with my position, which is that in polite society, lying is absolutely essential. Now, when I say lying, I'm saying that to be a little bit controversial. It's really not lying. I think of it as, you know, fibbing or, you know, prevarication that is for your benefit. But because there's so many situations, we take it for granted. So when you hear the word lying, people are like, oh no. But if I'm talking to you at a party, I mean, this would never happen because I think I would probably like to talk to you forever. But let's say I was at a party with you.
Oh my God. Oh my God, folks. Like, is it getting hot in here or what?
I'm using the flattery on you. No, but if I didn't, I'm not going to say to you, well, Bob, you know, I'm tired of talking to you. And besides that, your breath smells like smoked salmon. So I'm going off to over here to talk. I mean, no, you don't do that.
No, but I do hear that a lot.
And people, if you say, does this dress look all right? Or, you know, there's so many situations where we are always lying to each other in order to protect the other person's feelings. So all of the techniques I use where you are not telling the total truth, it's always twofold, so that you can go do what you want to do at a party and you're protecting the other person's feelings. Now, as far as getting into a party, lying to get in, like to crash a party, that's a little bit of a different area. And I don't think I wouldn't be able to be one of those wedding crashers like in the movie. You know, if you're dressed wrong at a party, you know, I once went to a party where no one told me it was black tie, or maybe I didn't get the invitation or something. And I was dressed, you know, like very casually. And so I could say, oh, duh, I didn't get the invitation. Well, that's not very interesting. Or you could do what I did, which is to say, you know, I made up a story. I said, I had a fight with my boyfriend and he locked me out of the apartment. And, or maybe I didn't say that. I don't know. I said something that doesn't sound very good, but I said something that was more interesting. It was years ago. And that kind of thing, if it's done in the spirit of mingling, is okay by me.
Okay. All right. Well, as we kind of wind down, I was thinking back. The first time we spoke, you told me that you got a lot of flack from people about not being on Facebook at the time. And I wondered if your feeling about Facebook has changed over 7 years as it's become incredibly ubiquitous within our lives, some of our lives.
Actually, I have obviously softened. You really can't be in the world and not be on any of these things. I mean, and I'm a social person, so I have to connect with people on, and I like Twitter and Facebook for various things, especially for connecting professionally. And also Facebook is an extremely useful tool for finding people. I have a section in the book on how to follow up at parties. And you know, if you've met somebody at a party, but you neglected, something happened, you didn't get their full name and their information, it's so easy to find them on Facebook just through the hostess's friend list or whatever, and then to send them a direct message saying, hey, you know, they can always ignore it or hopefully not ignore it, but, you know, they don't have to be your friend. But it's a great way of connecting, but it's not a good way of mingling. That's how I feel.
Okay, so you have come around on that a little bit.
Yeah.
And have you, you know...
People use it over the...
I'm sorry, say that again?
People use it for, I think, in not a correct way. I mean, I don't think you should put your whole life on Facebook, and I don't particularly want to see everybody's lunch, you know, on Facebook. But it is a great way of connecting with people, and then you should take it offline then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So.
Have you, I'm just curious, have people from your past found you on Facebook?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. I had somebody found me on Facebook who was the lead in the High School Musical. I was the star of my High School Musical, and he was the male lead. And I hadn't heard or seen or talked to him, you know, since high school. So he found me on Facebook. Lots of people. I've found a lot of old friends on Facebook.
Nice. And so you like that?
Yeah. No, it's good for reconnecting and connecting. It's just not good for communicating and, you know, socializing and mingling. It's just good for the initial, you know, connection. That's what I think.
I think you were also concerned at the time about the idea that, you know, if you want to reach out to someone, I think you were – or maybe this is in the book. Now maybe I'm confused. But you talk about send them a message. Don't send them a friend request necessarily to start
right
off. Because yeah, then you face the opportunity to be, you know, rejected.
Yeah, I think people don't get the steps of it. Like they're like never. If you've just met somebody at a party, never post on their you can't post if you're not their friend, but you should never friend request them until you direct message them. That's exactly what I say. Because you direct message them, that's a like, hi, you know, and then after they respond back in a positive way, then you can send a friend request. But just to send a friend request out of the blue, in my opinion, it's not, this is a generational thing. People who are in their 20s are not going to even know what I'm talking about. So, because they just automatically, you know, people who are in their 20s, a lot of them have, you know, 1500 friends, and they just, any second they meet anybody there, they just put them in as a friend. So it does depend on what level, you know, what generation you are, I think.
Got it. And so what's next? You've updated this book. Will there be an update to Life as Friends? Or, well, what do you?
I don't think so. I have another idea for a book that's about mingling, but I never talk about things until I've written the proposal and sent it to my agent. So this, I have a new book in mind for that is in the mingling arena, but it will be a new book.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find the greatly revised and updated new edition of Gene Martinet's The Art of Mingling, Fun and Proven Techniques for Mastering Any Room, as well as her other – she's got several other books. The one I'm most familiar with is Life as Friends, which I also recommend. They're in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order either of them right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching on MrMedia.com, you know how this works. Either left or right underneath the video, you'll see a copy of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon. You can buy the book. They can get it to you in 30 minutes or less via drone. At least that's the rumor. If not, you can get it via traditional delivery in a day or two, or I'm sure it's available as an ebook. You can download it instantly. Gene, is there a website you'd like to send people to if they want to know more?
Absolutely. You can go to genemartinet.com. Probably my name is on your screen, so
can't absolutely. You see it? Look down. It's right there.
There it is.
There it is. See?
Right there.
It's been there the whole time.
GeneMartinet.com.
Okay. I don't know why you missed that. And you're on Twitter now and Facebook.
Absolutely. And I really kind of love Twitter for various reasons. I mean, I love it for business reasons. I think it works really well to connect with people in your industry. I have a lot of connect with a lot of writers on Twitter.
And they're both great ways to sell books. That's what I'm told.
I hope so.
Listen, Gene Martinet, pleasure to have you back on the show, to see you this time. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you so much, Bob. It was great fun.
Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of unfun and unproven mingling techniques who are becoming more than a little nervous in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.